to another episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast. I am Burl Love, editor of the Cincinnati Enquirer, your host today, along with our guest host of the week, first time guest hosting, Sydney Franklin.
Hello. How are you? I'm good. I think this is my third time, Burl.
Third time guest hosting?
It is, okay. I believe. It has been a hot minute. So
well, we've kind of had you as an internal guest, but you're hosting today.
Like you're right.
Yes, you are hosting with me.
You're right.
Are you prepared?
I'm prepared. Are you kidding?
You're always prepared. So for our listeners, Sydney covers everything growth and development for us and has been in the throes of one of the biggest development stories we've had for a while. And that's this this epic battle over the future of Hyde Park Square.
Yes, this is like a beloved business district, historic, extremely old, like over 130 years, and people love it the way it is. It has a lot of character and charm, just like many other Cincinnati neighborhoods, but a developer is proposing a big project there that people do not like at all.
And so when it's been messy. People, we know now that at least 18,000 people don't like
yeah.
it, because that's how many signatures they collected. Well, I'm jumping ahead. So let's just kind of start at the beginning with this Hyde Park Square development.
Sure. So there's a pretty well-known developer in town that partnered with two other well-known developers. And what they're proposing for Hyde Park Square on a pretty like underutilized parcel, like right in the middle of everything, is a hotel and a pretty big apartment complex with like 170 or something units. They started doing some community engagement, they told me, but according to the neighborhood and the Hyde Park Neighborhood Council, which is effectively the community council there, the engagement was not sufficient, and they kind of feel bamboozled. The project is way too big for their liking, way too tall. They don't want a hotel because this is, you know, their neighborhood. They want housing. They don't want a hotel. And really long story short, Burl, like way too long, is that the past 6 months, there's been a lot of processes with the city, like going back and forth between the neighborhood, the developer, city council, the planning commission, basically trying to get this project rolling through the zoning, like rezoning process. It's very technical, so I won't get into too much of that right now, but essentially the project has been approved by the city of Cincinnati, and now the neighborhood wants this measure to be repealed this fall on the ballot, which is a huge deal.
So with us today as our guest is one of the main organizers of the opposition, not the only one, but someone who's really has been key to organizing the opposition. Her name is Molly Henning. She's one of the founders of Save Hyde Park Square, lifetime Hyde Park resident, former city planner with the city of Cincinnati, and now has a business. And she and others have been, you know, working all along to try to get changes in the plan, to try to scale it down. I think some of the yard signs I saw just simply said, it's too big or it's too tall, right?
Yes.
So that'll be great to talk to Molly Henning in a moment here when we launch into the special guest segment of the podcast. You have said this is one of the most, I won't say biggest, but this is a pretty significant story that we have you have been following just because of the implications it has on future development plans for the city. And I guess it's not an overstatement to say the outcome of this is going to have an impact. Can you kind of talk about that just for a second to set us up for our conversation with Molly?
Totally. You know, a lot of reporters in the newsroom have been working to cover this issue because it is so complex. And while it is about zoning at the end of the day, which can be boring, it's actually about the future of how our city looks and feels and how our neighborhoods grow, which is super important to everyone, whether you're a renter or a homeowner or a business owner, right? So what's essentially happened with this Hyde Park Square development is other neighborhoods have, you know, become very nervous that something similar might be built in their business district, in their historic district, in their neighborhood next to their home. And they're afraid that the city, no matter how much opposition that they put up against a project, the city is not going to care. They're just going to approve whatever the developer puts forth because we need more housing. We're in a housing crisis. And yes, everyone wants to solve that problem, but, you know, the whole phrase like work smarter, not harder also applies to development. Don't just build, like build smartly according to zoning. And so you'll hear Molly talk probably about, you know, why she is okay with development in her neighborhood, but she wants it to adhere to zoning. This is bigger than Hyde Park for sure.
All right. Well, let's, without further ado, get into all of that with our special guest, Molly Henning from Save Hyde Park Square. Special guest time on That's So Cincinnati, and as promised, we have with us Molly Henning, one of the founders of Save Hyde Park Square. Thank you for joining us today.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
So, I'm curious, just first of all, because there isn't a time when someone hasn't thought about, you know, when it comes to, you know, government or City Hall, like, I don't like this. We need to fight City Hall. But no one really has the time, the experience, the inclination. You know, it's a lot of time it's all talk, and then our elected leaders do what they do, and then everybody moves on. So this is pretty significant that a group was able to, you know, do the proverbial fight City Hall and get enough signatures on the ballot to, or get enough signatures to put this issue on the ballot. But like I said, I'm curious. Why were you compelled to become so involved?
Well, I wasn't planning on it. I'll start there. I was a city planner about 25 years ago with the city of Cincinnati. I went to DAP for urban planning, and my bachelor's degree is in design and historic preservation from the Savannah College of Art and Design. So the last 20 years, I have been just happily doing design work. And living in Hyde Park, which is where I grew up, and reading the news, reading the Inquirer, and following things just as any citizen would. I was surprised when I read about the development last summer. And I understood the way the city works and that there is a zone change process. And in the zone change process, there is a public component to that. So I went to my local community council meeting to hear what was going on. I heard the developer and their lobbyist give the presentation as to what was proposed. I was a bit shocked. And that was in October of last year. And saw that they had scheduled another meeting, a follow-up meeting, a larger meeting at Hyde Park School to just cover this issue and present this to the public. At which point, I felt compelled. Well, when I attended, there were a lot of people there, probably 200 people. And while I don't love public speaking, I signed up to speak because I knew something about this that could potentially be helpful. So when it was my time to speak, I thanked the developer for wanting to invest in our community and said, we look forward to a development in our community. However, then I looked at the audience and I said, what they're asking for is a huge change from what the zoning allows. Hyde Park has very strict zoning guidelines. Not only is new development limited to 50 feet, it has an urban design overlay district on top of that. So what they were asking to do, as I had just seen the presentation and everyone else had seen the presentation with these enormous buildings, was inform the my neighbors that there was a public component to this. And if they wanted to get involved and they were unhappy with anything, then they should attend meetings and they should call their city council people. They should contact the planning department. They should let their feelings be known about what they want, not just to say what they don't want, but what do you want to see in your community? And I naively thought that that's the way it still worked. It's not the way it works anymore in Cincinnati, unfortunately. We have a planning commission that makes sweeping decisions disregarding what the communities want. And I learned that fact, unfortunately, and so did the community. So after many hours of public meetings, whether it was the staff conference with the planning department, the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of letters and phone calls they'd received, the planning department and the planning commission and city council disregarded all of our concerns and gave the developer everything they were asking for without one thing that the community asked for.
So tell us, in so many words, what exactly the community wanted and still wants if development were to happen there.
Well, I think there's a misconception that Hyde Park people are against everything, and that's just not the case. People are really excited about a development. This is an underutilized collection of parcels, mm-hmm. and people are excited about something coming in here. They want housing. They want more retail. They want more restaurants. They just want the zoning adhered to. And the zoning says 50 feet. It does not allow an apartment, or I'm sorry, it does not allow a hotel. And this is why the developer is pursuing a planned development. Mm-hmm. And that is something that's a can of worms right there, what a planned development does to a community.
Absolutely. Just for our listeners, planned developments are a specific zoning designation that allows a developer, a landowner, to build multiple different buildings with multiple different uses on a single lot. This is happening all over town. It's also increased in recent years in the city of Cincinnati. And usually, because there's so much public involvement in a planned development, it's required that developers speak to the community. Tension kind of boils over when the community doesn't like said plan. So that's where we're at.
And to your earlier point, it seems like anymore that public input process is a check the box, we did it, as opposed to we need to listen and take into consideration the concerns and, if necessary, modify the development. And so from the perspective of you and others in the group, there was none of that. There was...
Correct.
Did you... And when you said earlier, it's not like we're anti-development, we're anti, you know, this development, especially the size of the building and the fact it's going to be a hotel. What were some of the... Were there some compromises that people offered that would have allowed the project to move forward? It seems like the developer was going in all or nothing.
So, yes. So during this process, I ended up joining the Hyde Park Neighborhood Council Zoning Committee. So I was privy to those conversations as to what the Zoning Committee, which is made up of very qualified people, mm-hmm. architects and engineers, who have been doing it for a long time. And they offered compromises and said, you know, we'll let you go taller. We'll allow the hotel use if you do these things, which is we asked for lots of setbacks. We asked for a reduction in the height. We asked for more parking to be created because Hyde Park Square already has a scarcity of parking. So we wanted to improve some things in the neighborhood while we were doing this, improve the parking situation, enhance the business district, not dominate it, not take away the business district's on-street parking or surface parking. So there were things that we asked for in exchange for allowing a hotel use. So the neighborhood was originally in favor of this. However, we never got anything back in return. And through the process, there was a degradation, I would say, in the relationship between the community and the developer, where the neighborhood was not getting a response. The developer kept referring to it as a community-driven project, which it was not. And then when we came to the staff conference, there were mischaracterizations that were made about what the neighborhood council had said, that the developer had said. So things changed quickly in January after the staff conference. And then the neighborhood council zoning committee decided we can't trust this process. We can't trust this developer. And therefore, we just want the existing zoning adhered to. Unfortunately, that was how it played out. So that's why they came back and said, look, you don't even meet the qualifications to be a planned development. Before Connected Communities, the new zoning code that was affirmed last summer by City Council, affirmed the 50-foot height requirement for Hyde Park Square. They did not suggest that a hotel was something that should go into our neighborhood business district. So really, when the neighborhood did a survey, the developer did their own survey, which was very leading and made a lot of people very upset. When the neighborhood did their own survey, you know, it was sort of 50-50 about the hotel. People like the idea of a boutique hotel.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, 90 rooms isn't a boutique hotel.
Right.
And we all like the idea of a rooftop restaurant. Sounds great. But then when you start to peel back the layers of how this would impact the business district, its parking situation, the construction upheaval that would happen, everyone started to say, maybe this isn't such a good idea. This is an enormous project. It's probably almost half the size of the business district, maybe a third.
It sounds like you all have experienced a lot of whiplash, for a better lack of a term. And not to speak on behalf of the developer, but as a real estate reporter, you know, I'm talking to you and I'm talking to them and I'm talking to the city. So I'm kind of getting all three sides as best as I can, as much as they're willing to talk to me. But I feel like they also feel as though they've experienced whiplash throughout this process in communicating and working with the community. And I know that they would also say that they have compromised. There are setbacks. They did change the parking plans. They've done a lot of things in their minds to appease the community and to still get what they want. But you're saying that is not the case.
Well, we hope that those things would be ironed out in the process as this went to council committee, or even before that in the planning commission. What the planning commission approved and city council approved was a very vague concept plan. It doesn't require any setbacks. It allows a hotel and it allows the buildings to be 85.5 feet tall, which they could add 10% to without a hearing. So we're looking at that. The site plan that they presented at Planning Commission was different than the site plan that the neighborhood had seen.
Mm-hmm.
There were things that different city departments had asked for, including Department of Transportation, Transportation Engineering, that said they had to move their access drive to the south end of the lot. Well, that changed the entire site plan, divided the buildings in two, put the access drive to the whole development right across the street from Hyde Park School. So that made the neighbors even more upset because we already have pedestrian safety issues in Hyde Park Square. So it was the vagueness of the concept plan. As someone said, it was like a concept of a concept plan that was being approved by Planning Commission and by City Council, and that's irresponsible. That puts it on the neighborhood to hammer this out with the developer. And at that point, that relationship was not very strong.
And just for a procedural update, the Planning Commission is where these things get sorted out before a formal vote is taken by City Council. Typically, City Council, it's very rare, at least in recent history, that City Council would not approve something that was passed by the Planning Commission. So when this did get approved by the Planning Commission, that seems to be when you guys went into high gear. That must have been when you decided, okay, we do have, you know, the ultimate way to challenge this, and that's let the voters decide. Is that when it passed Planning Commission? Is that when your group and others decided to get organized, or were you working at that point to try to plead your case to the individual members of council, which I think it was, what, a 6-2?
7-2.
Yeah, there were definitely a couple of council members who voted no.
And yeah, Jean-Michel.
That really tracks for them.
Jean-Michel voted no.
Mm-hmm.
And Scotty Johnson.
And Scott Johnson, but the rest approved it.
Yes, and their reason being, it's a housing opportunity. We desperately need
and
housing.
And that goes back, we mentioned briefly connected communities. Mm-hmm. So that was the big change in the overall zoning structure for the city that did a lot of things, but just to kind of boil it all down, and Sydney, you can fill in the gaps here, but to address housing and to allow some more denser housing in the city.
Yes. And density is, it's actually a neutral thing, but people find it either great or very bad. And what the developers in Hyde Park Square are proposing is a pretty dense project. They have broken up their, apartment and hotel plan into three separate buildings to make it look a little less intimidating, I suppose. But it's still bringing a lot of density. I mean, like, well over 100 apartments, 90 boutique hotel rooms. It's the type of project that last year, when Connected Communities was really in the public eye before it became official law, people were afraid of, because it would bring just more traffic, more people, more construction to their neighborhood without, this due process of public opinion. So here we are, and this is probably one of the first big examples since Connected Communities of something that, is tied to Connected Communities but isn't directly related to it. Like, I think they were going to do this project with the planned development designation regardless. But it definitely speaks to that concern, the nervousness that neighborhoods have felt in regards to the zoning change. Am I right?
Well, I think that planned developments by nature are sort of a get out of jail free card that a developer can get whatever they want. And the city, unfortunately, has been, the pattern is that they give the developers pretty much whatever they want. They're using it as an economic development tool, which is great, but it isn't sound land use planning. The neighborhood has established zoning. That's what people want to see adhered to.
How did the conversations go with City Council after the Planning Commission approved it? Were you involved with in conversations with different members of council? And I guess what I'm curious, but my real question is what was their response when you were able to demonstrate overwhelming community neighborhood level opposition? To the, your question of, are you listening to us? How was it justified?
Well, I think, yes, we did. We did request meetings, and we had, and several council members did meet with us. But one of the things I'd like to point out is that as we came out of those meetings, lobbyists were walking in. And these were the same lobbyists that were working for this developer. And city council people would say, oh, you've talked with so many people in Hyde Park about this already. And I said, well, yes, but you're speaking to the lobbyists too, aren't you? Well, yes, we are. So this is the way work is getting done in the city of Cincinnati right now. The developers might not be in the room with these council people or the mayor, but their lobbyists, their paid lobbyists, are every day. So we had time and with some of these council members, and we pled our case, and many of them listened to us, but they chose not to act on any of the issues that we brought up. So that was even more, why it was even more egregious at city council. They knew the problems that were associated with this development that were not being fixed. They had the power to address these issues before it was approved. They had the power to put the teeth in any of these regulations, and they chose to just give them carte blanche. So yes, it was upsetting. We had done as much as we could to educate each of the council members that would meet with us, but it felt even more, that's why it felt even more upsetting. We thought we had the planning department on our side listening, and we thought that they were apolitical. But then they did recommended a sweeping change despite the hundreds and hundreds of letters. That staff report was something like 1,500 pages
long.
Very
intimidating to read.
Yeah.
Did you read every page as a reporter, Sydney?
Almost all. There were too many letters of, opposition and, right. Approval or whatever. And so I didn't read every single one of those. That's insane. But I did highlight a lot of them, didn't I? Yes, I did.
So City Council ends up approving it. I have not seen personally, this is just like anecdotal, day in the life, Burl Love. I have not encountered a more thorough and organized petition drive. I don't think ever. Like, I was walking to go to a Reds game and people came up to me. I went to the DMV or the BMV and there were people in the lobby getting signatures. I ran into some people on Fountain Square. Now, I'm not a city resident. I live in Blue Ash, so I had to be like, nope, sorry, I don't want to mess up your petition. I don't live in the city. But it was, you know, say what you will about, you know, what side of the issue you fall on. You have to take a step back and say, this was impressive. You know, this was, I have not seen anything like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Just so our listeners know, in case you haven't read about it through Cincinnati.com, the group gathered well over 18,000 signatures that were verified by the Board of Elections down to like above 13,000 or something like that, 14, yeah. In 3 weeks' time.
And they only need, you only needed what, 9,000, something yeah. like that? So you got double the number. That's like making sure you have enough qualified signatures right there. If you go out to double the
sounds intimidating
the target,
as well.
Yeah.
Well, we knew it was an enormous task. But this is why city council should pay attention. Mm-hmm. Because it was not hard to recruit the 300 volunteers that we had. Every time we would put, even before planning committee, even before the petition, any time we asked our volunteers, hey, could you show up for this? They showed up in droves. We had petition collectors from Clifton, Northside, Mount Airy, Paddock Hills, Oakley, Mount Washington, Mount Lookout. We had letters from 14 other community councils and 19 total civic and community councils. This has struck a huge nerve.
I would agree. You know, when I see people collecting petitions, a lot of times people say, no, I'm not interested, avoid eye contact. As soon as they heard what this was about, the response I saw, and this is all anecdotal, was like, oh, hell yeah, that's messed up. I'm totally signing this.
Oh, man. So.
Well, we have passionate volunteers because it comes down to community. And I think the developer, I know the developer, underestimated how important Hyde Park Square is to not just Hyde Park, but the city as a whole. It is a tremendous urban space. We have a city park in the middle of it. We have two elementary schools on either end of it. We have a library, a post office, a diner, a coffee shop, great shops.
Graders is there.
Of course. How many people in the city have enjoyed an ice cream cone in Hyde Park Square as they strolled the square, looked in the shops? Oftentimes, after a family event or milestone, people have tremendous emotional attachment to Hyde Park Square. This is why there was such a response. As I collected signatures, people said, you know, whether I was in Washington Park or Findlay Market, people said, they want to do that to Hyde Park Square? That's ridiculous. That's crazy. That should absolutely be reconsidered. Sure. Tell me where to sign. So it really is, it was an easy sell because people treasure our neighborhoods. People treasure our neighborhood business districts, and they want to see them protected. Our zoning code has things in place to protect our neighborhood's character and to protect the architectural integrity of some of our districts. I don't know how many urban design overlay districts there are off the top of my head, but there's a lot of them. And we have a lot of historic districts because people care about how their communities look and how they're developed. They want them protected. Mm-hmm. They are open to development. That's why you have a zoning code. In your zoning code, it's what you want to see developed.
I think our readers and listeners have learned more about zoning in the last year than they ever thought they would, including me. When I first started reporting on real estate, I thought this was the most intimidating part of the business of building.
It's a lot.
And now I'm like, wow, I know a lot. Not as much as you, of course, but it's pretty fascinating. And this has been arguably one of the biggest borough things I've covered in the city in my 3 years here.
Well, I would agree. It's so fascinating. And you touched on this a little bit, in what you just said, Molly, about, people care about the neighborhoods in Cincinnati. So I think the interest in supporting the petition, went beyond Hyde Park. I think people paid attention to this and said, well, to prevent this to happen in my neighborhood? Like, we need, you mentioned sending a message. City council, our elected leaders, this is an important message for them that these procedures we have shouldn't be perfunctory, that the neighborhood feedback component that's built into this shouldn't be blown off. And now it's going to be on the ballot. I think that's going to be a very interesting vote. I'm not even going to predict how it's going to go.
Well,
but
unless,
I have a feeling.
If I could interrupt.
Yeah.
City Council has the option right now to repeal this decision.
Right.
And we would love to see this development get going. And that is the path, the fastest path forward to progress, is to repeal this zone change, have the developer pull out their plans that conform to zoning. If they are a developer worth their salt, they have plans that conform to the underlying zoning. I'm sure they do. So let's go forward with that plan.
Right.
And let's get started. We have a lot of empty storefronts that the developer owns in Hyde Park Square. They've forced out a lot of small businesses, about 10. Many of them, most of them, wanted to stay. So they've been forced to either close or relocate. We want those back. It's really hard to get retail back once it leaves.
Yeah.
But we want, you know, having empty storefronts is not good for the rest of our business district. Our business district is strong. We have a lot of businesses that have been there over 25 years, and they want to remain, but it's not good to have all, you know, a third of your business district empty.
Right. Well, they've indicated that they're not going to repeal it, that they're ready to let the voters.
Well, they haven't voted yet, and we would like to urge them to consider it, because it is the most efficient way forward. Why wait to November to find out how this goes? We're poised and ready to go. We have our volunteers. We're putting together our game plan. But why? Why wait to November? We all know it's not a good time to start construction projects.
That's very true.
Let's start now.
Well, to be clear, what was approved in the spring was the concept plan development, and they still have to get a final PD later this year. That takes months of supposed engagement and planning. So construction wouldn't have started anyway in the next 6 months, probably. I don't know if they could, they probably couldn't do site work either.
But with a plan development, we're not saying do a plan development.
As it stands currently,
there would be no other hearings. It would be just the UDOD process, the Urban Design Overlay District process, that they would have to conform. Come back to the community, work with us. We want them to come back to the community and work with us. Let's work within the existing zoning. Let's see what we can build. That's exciting. You know, that's what the community wants. That's all we want is them to.
Well, this would be a good time to like list the options. So I think you two will have to help me. But option one is the developer is like, okay, we're out. And then pretty much things start over. That would be one possible outcome.
They would have to sell their land.
Right. But because of where we are right now with this looming on the November ballot, they could just say, all right, this is getting too expensive. This is taking too long. We're going to take our development dollars elsewhere.
Which they could do. And honestly, the property is very, very valuable because they've already done all the hard work in assembling the parcels. This project or this property will not languish. It will be developed by someone. If it wants to be this developer, great. Work with the community. But yes, that is an option for them to sell. And I'm sure someone will snap it up and you know, understanding that what the community wants, they would follow the zoning.
Would it be okay in the community's eyes if adhering to the zoning code, the developer built one giant building on these combined parcels with, you know, hundreds of housing units? Is that okay?
I don't think you can do that. I mean, one of our architects on the zoning committee, you know, that's a myth. That was okay. A threat.
I'm not going to call it a threat, but.
Oh, I mean, they said, well, if you don't give this to us, then we will build. We'll build a box and we're going to put in 300 apartments. You can't build 300. It's impossible to build that. The apartments wouldn't have windows. You wouldn't.
Yeah.
No parking.
Right.
So I think what we would like is just if you take the hotel out of the development, as much as we all love a boutique hotel, it really is an intense use for the site. If you take that out, you get the same number of housing units that we would have that the city would be getting if they did the entire project. That's why it was such a fallacy that the city council approved it, because we need housing in the city. We need housing. Well, a hotel is not housing. And if they really are serious about the housing project or housing problem or issue, then put housing where a hotel could go, right? Like, don't put the hotel in. We don't need it. We have 8 hotels within 2.5 miles of our Hyde Park Firehouse. We have almost 900 hotel rooms that close to Hyde Park Square. It's redundant. We don't need it. What we need is housing. So conformed is, I think the neighborhood would consider a height variance, right? Like, those are things that you can do within the existing zoning. It's not that it has to be 50 feet, but 85 to 94 feet from lot line to lot line is what they are permitted to do right now and put in a hotel.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's in their concept plan.
All right. Well, to wrap up here, I'm curious. You indicated before we started recording that this is not your comfort zone. Becoming one of the voices, the most recognizable voice, face, I won't say the face of the organization, but your profile is raised a little bit here for this cause. So, and as you said, that's sort of not what you expected and definitely not something you sought after, but the cause must be important enough to set all that aside. What have you learned about you yourself through this process?
Good question.
That's a great question.
I get paid to ask good questions.
You should do that for a living.
I'm sure you do, bro.
Let's see. What have I learned? I've learned that people are passionate about their community. It has been a very healing exercise in people from both sides of the political spectrum working together for the community. I've loved all that interaction. It's been wonderful. Every time a petitioner would come in or circulator would come in and to turn in their petition, we'd talk about, well, what worked for you and where'd you go and what are people saying? And I loved all that interaction. It was great. And I think I miss all of the, how all of the different current events and issues and built environment all intersect and how people are involved. That's all fascinating to me. Working in a design business that's, you know, it's more insular. Mm-hmm. So that's been very interesting for me. I've met neighbors even though I've lived in Hyde Park most of my life, I met neighbors I didn't know before. It was really inspiring to see so many people work so hard on something they got no financial gain or fame or anything for. They just did it because they cared deeply about their community. So it was very fulfilling to be a part of that and help create the structure for that, for people to work within that. And people were so grateful to have something to do. Say, you know, I'm just so angry at the city that they would just ignore all of us. This gives me something I can do to make a difference, to take control. People are tired of not being listened to by their government. And I think City Hall really needs to take this seriously, that we had no trouble getting volunteers who are passionate about their neighborhood. Again, I'll say we had volunteers from all over the city because they know these developments, these planned developments are happening and, you know, Bond Hill against the community's wishes. Cuff has seen so much that's happened in their community. It's not even recognizable anymore. Walnut Hills, they're happening. These planned developments are happening all over the city and they're happening at a rapid rate. These never used to be done when I was a city planner. This often, the law department was very clear that these should be done sparingly because it sets a dangerous precedent going forward. And this is another actually large issue that most people don't consider. If city council does not repeal this decision, or if we are not able to repeal this decision on the ballot, then 85 feet is the norm. What is to stop the next developer in the parking lot just south of this from building 85 feet as a starting point? You've created a land use precedent that leaves the city with no recourse to say no. So this is, these are the, most everybody loves the idea of a development in Hyde Park Square. We'll just build it. Hyde Park Square could use it. Well, you know what? As soon as you start to explain all the complexities of this site, how it will impact the local businesses and the transportation issues and the parking issues, and the safety issues for children and other pedestrians, then people start to say, well, wait. Maybe 85 feet is too big. Maybe, you know, we don't need a hotel. Maybe, you know, then people start to really, when they start to, they love the idea of the development, but then when they really start to peel the layers back, well, have you considered this? Have you considered that? How about what's going to happen down the road after this is built? You know, they can't say no after this. 85 feet is the norm. So those are the repercussions that most people don't foresee. And that's what we have tried to do with the Save Hyde Park Square movement.
I'd love to ask a final question, if that's okay.
You go for it.
You've said that the community wants to be heard. All communities in Cincinnati want their voices to be heard when it comes to how their neighborhoods are developed. To me, please correct me if I'm wrong, but to me that says we want you to say no on our behalf or yes on our behalf. I also want to know what you think the city should do in this specific situation with this specific developer and the degradation of the relationship between these two groups. How should the city step up? What could they do? What could the engagement department do, planning department do to make this process smoother for you, or I guess the next?
Well, I think
big
there were
problem.
Some council people that said this process has to change. Mm. Well, unfortunately, that's not soon enough for Hyde Park Square.
Okay.
So nobody on city council wants to be the adult in the room to say no to a developer, to say we have to balance this with what the community wants. So we may have a strong mayor, but there really is no strength in terms of who's standing up for our neighborhoods. Everybody wants to be at the ribbon cutting for these developments, but they don't want to put the work in to create the balanced approach of sound, sustainable development. They just, you know, they heard us out, they listened to us, but they made no changes to anything. They just approved it. They should have waited. They should have waited for 30 days and tried to hammer this out, let the community work with a developer more, hire a mediator. I don't know. But the short answer is follow the zoning. Mm-hmm. Because that's what the community has come to expect. And zoning is important. It's very important for economic development that you know when you buy in an area what can be built. And those are the laws. They're not arbitrary. They go through neighborhood plans. They go through, there's a large vetting process to come up with a zoning code. Mm-hmm. It was very intentional in 2003 or 2004 with the new zoning code that what was built on the corner of Michigan and Erie, the Lululemon building, Michigan Terrace, it was very clear that that's not what they wanted going forward. That building is 80 feet tall at the very, very top in a very small section because there's these setbacks. The city changed the zoning code after that and they said, no, this is wrong. 50 feet is where it should be. So I would say follow your zoning code or change your zoning. You know, they did change our zoning. They, with Connected Communities, they reduced the parking requirement, which some council members decided, well, that's a reason to make this a planned development because it doesn't provide enough parking. Well, that mm-hmm. shows that Connected Communities is a failure then, or at least that component of it, of reducing parking, because Hyde Park Square is not a transit center. Madison Road is a transit corridor, not Erie Avenue. So,
and why that's important is Connected Communities allowed more or reduced the parking requirements for residential developments along transit corridors because of it's a transit corridor. That's where bus routes are going to mm-hmm. be heavily scheduled and things like that. And so, to your point, Erie Avenue is not.
Well, they also reduced parking requirements in neighborhood business districts as well.
Right. That's right.
In transit corridors, they increased height, which is That makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. But why are we approving non-housing developments?
Yeah.
On transportation corridors. I was just in Madisonville yesterday. On my way there, I saw there's, you know, they're putting in these storage units and things on Madison Road. Well, why, brand new? Why would you do that? That's a waste of an opportunity to build more housing on a transit corridor. So let's be more intentional about where we're putting these high density development housing projects.
Right.
And let's also talk about affordability. Connected Communities was supposed to increase all kinds of housing. None of this housing in Hyde Park Square that's being proposed is affordable. Mm-hmm. Not even 5%. And if you look at what these rents are going to be, if I were a developer, I would ask for 85 to 95 feet too, right? I would want to maximize my profit, but that's not what the zoning is supposed to do. The zoning is supposed to make, set land use programming for the future.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, and they're not following their own rules. They're just capriciously putting in a plan development wherever a developer says, oh, I purchased all this land. This is what I want to do with it. And the city reacts and they say, okay, show us what you'd like and we'll make it happen. Unfortunately, that seems to be how they're using that section of the zoning code called a plan development.
I think time will tell, not just how this plays out, but how the city continues to respond to opportunities to build more housing and whether or not citizens are for it or against it. I mean, I'll be here to watch and report on it. This has just been really fascinating, but it sounds also exhausting. So kudos to you guys for keeping with it over the past few months and, you know, getting enough signatures to get on the ballot this fall. Maybe we'll see it there.
We have a tremendous, tremendous team of very passionate volunteers, and we're grateful for their enthusiasm. And we'll see where this takes us.
All right. Well, thank you for your time. Thank you for going outside your comfort zone and talking to us. I don't think you really answered the question about what you learned about yourself. You pivoted to the politics a little bit. But I love the story behind the story. And it's sort of like, you know, if you were to script this for the movie version of it, you know, you have these developers, they've got the money, they've got the, you know, the political connections, but quietly behind the scenes, there's this former city planner who's going, wait a minute, I don't think this is the way they should be going about it.
Molly is one of multiple people who have expertise in this field or related fields who have showed up and said, no,
like they didn't.
Right.
They didn't quite know what they were getting involved with when they decided to fast track this.
There were five former city planners who testified in some capacity against this development. Five of us. So that should be a clue that something isn't quite right. About myself, I think I was just impressed with my community. I was impressed with how engaged people became. It really restored, as I mentioned, my faith and in community, and that people really do care, and how intelligent people are when you give them facts and they know when something's wrong, and a sense of purpose. If you give them a structure in which to work, that they'll go crazy. They'll become possessed, and they won't stop until they get what they believe is right. So it's easy to feel sad with the way a lot is happening in the world today. But it was very, very enriching to see people come together from all, you know, sort of walks of life and work towards something that they feel strongly about. And it's about community, and it's about protecting our neighborhoods. And I think if what I learned about myself is, you know, pride in my community, maybe that's it.
I think that's fair enough. Well, Molly Henning, again, thank you for your time. As Sydney said, not just we'll be watching it, but I think a lot of people will be watching to see how this plays out and the, you know, what are the aftershocks going to be? Will this send a message to, you know, the Planning Commission, City Council, that they can't just go through the motions when it comes to the community input section of all of these projects. So
they should be watching. They really should be watching.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I feel, Sydney, that I have just completed a master's class in zoning. My head is spinning with all of this, but this is your area. This is kind of like, mm-hmm. This threads almost every story that you tend to cover.
Yeah, it's a lot, bro. I'm not going to lie, but I love learning about these things because I did not study real estate in depth in school. And being here in Cincinnati, working on this beat for the Inquirer has really been a crash course, not just because of small projects like the one in Hyde Park Square, but big ones happening downtown, the Convention Center project, FC Cincinnati is building things, Over the Rhine is changing, Walnut Hills is changing, Westwood's changing, and zoning has to do with all of it. So you have to know it. Maybe not inside and out, but I have to know it fairly well to be able to talk about it intelligently. So thanks for allowing us to dive into this today.
Oh, no, this was great. Yeah, we went into the weeds, but that's yeah. what we do sometimes on this podcast. Okay, flipping now, 180 degrees. Sydney, you are, unlike Molly Henning, you are not a lifelong Cincinnatian. You came here just to work with us at the Inquirer. Where did you grow up?
Louisville, Kentucky.
Louisville, not too far. You have had, what, 3 years now? Mm-hmm. Almost four?
Mm-hmm. Three.
Three. To embed yourself in all things Cincinnati.
Yes.
What's your experience been like?
You know, I love it too much. Like, this is just such a fun place to be, not just to work, because like I've said over and over again, you can hopefully see through my articles, I'm really passionate about the built environment in this city, and so is everyone else. So that really makes my job easy. And personally, like, I live downtown, I walk to work, I get to enjoy like all the awesome programming and events happening around downtown, and I feel kind of like alive, especially in the spring, because this is the time of year when I first moved here, and it reminds me of how new I was, and so I feel that today. I actually felt that walking here today. I was excited.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
As a downtown resident, what do you think, let me ask it this way. I have been here long enough where the idea of living downtown was not anything mm-hmm. people would consider, you know? But a lot has changed since then. What do you like about living downtown? Not that I want you to sound like a commercial for Steve, our friend Steve Leeper at 3CDC.
I try my best not to, even though they're in charge of everything, so, and my life included. The walkability is probably number one, because I moved here from New York, and that's what I know yeah. and want mm-hmm. in my life. Number two, honestly, the restaurant scene is insane. I try not to go overboard, but I love going out to eat maybe once a week and really special dinner, maybe once a month, and just being able to get dressed, go outside and go to this really cool restaurant that's now like a really big deal in the country/world
yeah.
is awesome. So
yeah,
I love that.
I agree with you. What are some of your favorite give me a recommendation.
Crown Cantina.
Okay.
It's one of my favorites.
All right.
They are moving from downtown to Pendleton. Big deal.
Which is downtown-esque.
Well, that's where I live, downtown-esque.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see their new space and hopefully write about it so, you know, our listeners can see all what right. it looks like if they don't go. Also tacos, but cheaper. Bakersfield is great.
I like Bakersfield.
Yeah, it's a solid one. My nieces are obsessed. Every time they come in town, we go there.
Okay.
I don't know why they won't choose something else. Well, but yeah.
If you like it, you like it, right?
Exactly.
All right. And I mean, there's a lot of activity, especially mm-hmm. involving restaurants, because you have the former Saks Fifth Avenue.
Yes.
Which is going to be on the ground floor, the new Salazar, right across the street from his other restaurant, Mita's. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then, that's already like looks so different right now.
Yeah. Honestly, it's really pretty.
And then
it's
right around cool the building. Corner, you've got the whole construction of the convention center. I still haven't come to terms with the fact that I just can't shoot up Elm Street anymore from our office.
Oh, yeah. And I walk, bro. It's hard. there's so much construction right now, and I'm supposed to like enjoy that because it's my job.
Right.
But it is annoying. I have so much dust in my eyes probably today from walking to work.
Walking through the construction.
Genuinely.
Dodging the orange barrels and the construction fences.
It's everywhere, man. But that is a good thing, and hopefully it signals, you know, progress.
That is true, because the opposite is, you know, nothing's happening downtown, but we can't really say that's the case here.
Exactly.
All right. Well, with that, Sydney, shall we wrap it up?
Sure.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this week's episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast, a production of The Enquirer and Cincinnati.com.
If you enjoyed the podcast, please give us a rating and share it with a friend who loves all things Cincinnati.
Finally, if you value local journalism, and I know you do, and haven't subscribed for full digital access to Cincinnati.com, now is a great time. Just go to Cincinnati.com and click on the subscribe button to see a special offer just for you.
Thanks again, and see you next week.